Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
What is going on, everybody? My name is Conor Lawler. Welcome back to another week of Movie Mondays. This is the Heroes for Hire podcast. We are back again talking all the week's movie news, entertainment news, and just generally having a bit of a chit-chat about everything to do with film. As always, I am joined by my best pal, Mr. Sean Meehan. Sean, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Conor. Ready to talk more timely and relevant movie news and views.
What I really love about us is we're right bang on the button. Bang on that button
on
of
the
hot topics.
Of relevant topics to talk about.
Because the most clicks you get are from the few days after it's released. So we want to do it a month after.
Not a 3 and a bit weeks, I would say, after.
It came out, I think it was the 26th of October.
Ah, Jesus. Actually, yeah, that's pretty bad. That's not great, actually. No, that's on me. That is on me.
I will say, one of those weeks, I did have COVID, so I was housebound. So I couldn't leave anyway, even if I wanted to.
And one of the other weeks, I just didn't see it. So
that is true. That is actually a fact. He was just lazy. But we are back this week.
I was busy. I was suing so much.
But we are back this week, Sean, to finally talk about a movie that everybody's seen. But this means we can kind of just do a spoiler special.
Oh yeah,
straight out
full
the gate.
Spoilers right from the start. If you haven't seen it, you're worse than me.
It's, I mean, and that is
a sentence in itself.
I would take a long, hard look at myself if someone said that about me. But Sean, this is Heroes for Hire. I mean, what I wanted to say first, before we get into the review, is if everyone could give us a like and review, whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on, but Spotify. We're on Spotify. If you give us, we're looking for 100 5-star reviews by Christmas.
105 stars. That's what we want.
105 one-star reviews by Christmas.
Ultimately, it evens out somewhere, I'm sure.
But yeah, that's what we're looking for. But now, Sean, there's no more talking about everything else. This is a spoiler discussion about a movie that Marvel Phase 4, it's coming to an end. This is the last big hurrah for a phase that everybody's been like, about.
It's been the mid phase. It's been just not great overall, I would say.
So, I mean, we have started doing weird movie reviews here where we used to do scene by scene, then we just do general thoughts. Now it's kind of just a free for all. So, Sean, where would you like to begin with this
the
movie?
The year is 2026 and King T'Challa is sick.
This is true. So, I mean, very strong start to the movie. We're not going to go scene by scene, but I mean, the starting first minutes are one of the strongest parts of this film, I think.
Yeah, because it opens with Shuri in a panic trying to find a synthetic heart-shaped herb to save T'Challa, who's dying from some mystery unknown illness. This stuff was handled very well throughout the whole film.
Like, Ryan Coogler had such an impossible task for this movie. Whether you like the movie or dislike the movie, I mean, the man wrote a whole script with Chadwick Boseman in the lead, and then his lead character died, sadly. Like, he passed away. Like, what can you do? It's a shit situation. But then Ryan Coogler is just kind of left with just a script that makes no sense anymore, so he's got to rewrite a whole different movie, and he's got to keep the same release date for Phase 4 to be like, okay, well, this is when it's coming out, so we got to redo it.
Yeah, and so, like, the idea of, like you know, having the character die in the film, and we don't, like, of course we don't see him at all in, you know, there's no new footage, he hadn't filmed anything for this. But and this sounds like a poetic way to talk about it, but his presence is felt throughout the film. Like, it still matters that he was the Black Panther.
Yeah, you know what? I don't think they could have done that better. Like, that whole aspect of this film, I don't think you can do it better. I think this movie had to be made like this. I don't know any other way it could have been done that you go into the grief. You've got to talk about it, because otherwise it's just weird if everybody just kind of moves on. So you had to go into that area, and also you had to do it in a mature way.
Yeah, and I do think the actors bring their A game, probably because they are in grief as well.
Yeah.
Like, like any conversation that is had about T'Challa in this movie, you could put the emotions of talking about Chadwick Boseman into that, as a, you know, from a character point of view. So, like, every actor in this, like, brings their A game, and it's unreal. Oh,
by the way, can I just say Angela Bassett?
Oh my god.
I mean
just woman, destroying everyone.
Just every scene. Angela just walked on the set and she's like, I am going to die if this movie doesn't do well, so I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. She's just bringing everyone with her. She's absolutely killing it in this movie.
It's subtle and it's layered, and who would have guessed Angela Bassett's a very good actor?
But I was surprised as anyone, Sean.
I know, who could have seen that coming? But they're like, I don't think. I was trying to pick out if there was, a weakest part of this film. And it's probably, the little CIA subplot.
So the movie is 2 hours 40. I would say, just on a general view, I really like this movie.
Overall, love it.
I think it couldn't have been done any better. There is bits of it, obviously, that you could change. But a general overall view, I think for what they wanted to accomplish, they absolutely killed it. I agree with Martin Freeman, who I love. I mean, obviously, he's great in the role. But that whole scene with him and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, her Valentina Defontaine character, I don't care.
No.
It doesn't matter at all.
That character is, Martin Freeman's character is only in the movie, really, so that they can get to Riri Williams. And then he just has to stick around for a bit afterwards.
Because he was in the first one, so they kind of have to bring him back. But it does add minutes to a runtime that's already 2:40. So you could easily cut it back to 2:25, just getting rid of all that stuff.
That's it. It is a long film. But it's not. It doesn't suffer a huge amount because of it. Maybe if it was a little tighter, it'd be more easily accessible to people to watch.
And I think what probably adds to the length of the film is, the action scenes are kind of spread out, And
yeah,
but a lot of people were saying that in a negative, to be like, oh, it's a bit slow. I see that as a positive. It was letting it build, like, the grief is surrounding everyone in this film, and there's no point in just starting off fireworks, explosions, oh my god, it's amazing. Let's just sit in it. Let's just... It makes everything that all the characters do make more sense. Like, Letitia Wright as Shuri in this, in the first movie, she's all quips, all jokes. She's teenage little sister just taking the piss. In this one, her being silent is so much more effective in more scenes.
Yeah, and it's this is why... This is some of the good stuff that comes with... like the cinematic universe and the connected movies, is that we've seen what has made that character change. Mm. And we've watched that change happen over years now at this point. Like Shuri in this is like sad and in grief and she's angry. She's like pure vengeance at points. She's confused. She's scared. Like she's everything. And she's just like, and also, she's gonna like princess, and then spoilers, queen of a nation of a global superpower.
I really think they did that so well. Like that character grew tenfold within this film, and that is what grief is. Like she's feeling all of those emotions all at once, and she doesn't understand how to deal with it, and then constantly like stay with her normal life. Like my favorite is the anger, because a lot of that comes from guilt. So like she's angry, but she's more guilty on a lower level because she couldn't save him. And she's like, he's my big brother, I'm the smartest person here, and I couldn't fucking save him. And that just makes her angry at the world that like it took him from her.
And she was trying and she couldn't, and you know, she's thinking all of these things. And like I love the element of her character that like, and it was kind of hinted at earlier that she's not as serious and she's jokey and everything. But that's evolved now into like, she wants rid of a lot of the old traditions. Like she's done with it. It hasn't helped her at all. So now she's just focusing on what she knows and what she is able to do.
Yeah, like she can only rely on her strengths. Like, and her strengths aren't the same as T'Challa's strengths. That's just, she's a different person. So like she can only rely on what she knows. And I just, that was one of the major positives out of this, that I was kind of like, they're doing so well. Because a lot of Phase 4 is just quip, 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 joke. Let's not say in anything. Let's just move on. Shiny new thing. I'm not saying anything. Thor, Love and Thunder.
Absolutely.
But like, I think this is the first time in this whole phase where I was like, oh, you can be like slightly mature about this. That like, just trust the audience. They're going to come with you. You just have no music, nothing, just silence. Like the scene on the bridge, the fight on the bridge with Okoye, and when she's fighting for her life, there's no music. It's just literally her just fighting for her life against Namor's like henchman,
the one of the Talokan peoples.
Yeah, and like, and there's, that's such a good scene that in any other one of these movies, I feel like they're putting punchy music over it. She's saying quips, she's saying this, she's constantly like one line in it where she's just like surviving.
That's the thing, because in that fight, you see her like realize, okay, I can't win on strength. She has to be clever. And you can see her change her fight style during it. There's one bit where she like jabs the spear in and then she elbows to spin around. And it's just this really real moment of like, no, that's what someone would do.
Yeah.
Like, they wouldn't wait for the camera to cut so they could do that. They would just keep going.
So my question to you is, obviously Ryan Coogler is an incredibly talented human being. Like, just even putting this out. Everyone
and a lovely man, by all accounts.
It seems like a very lovely man. And you know what? That's even more important, even if you're talented. But I feel like a lot of people, because of Phase 4 is so weak, and a lot of people were feeling a lot very down, I don't want that to carry over this. There can be good movies in very dry spells. So is this movie going to get... Is this movie seen as better because it follows all the bad stuff, or is it going to get dragged down to like, that's alright, because Marvel's not very good at the minute?
Yeah, I would like to imagine that the like what came before doesn't affect this. I like that this is a good movie in a bottle. It's certainly a better movie if you've seen Black Panther.
Oh yeah.
Like it absolutely, like, there's the buy-in of like, no, this is the world and this is the family and this is what goes on. But I think it's just a good movie regardless of the phase it's in. Like, if this came out immediately after Infinity War or Endgame, I think it would still be a very good movie.
Yeah, no, and to be honest, I kind of agree. Like, I'm kind of talking through some of the talking points I've seen from other people that, like, just maybe some of the negatives that people had with the film that I couldn't really see. Like, as you said, I just kind of went in not expecting anything. I was like, first Black Panther's great. Let's see what this is like. And I was like, because they wrote the script, which had both of us alive. So let's see what they've come up with. Ryan Coogler, how's he going to do this? And then I came out with going, fuck me, that's even more impressive that they pulled that off somehow.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, the problems that were... The problems that kind of, not plagued, but that affected a lot of movies within Phase 4 was just, as you said, really inconsistent tone, wonky CGI for a lot of parts, and then stories that didn't seem to have any weight or meaning in the larger world. And I think this kind of addresses all of them. I will say, the second Ironheart suit, I do not like. It looks like a Power Ranger.
Interesting. I also will say, I feel Act 2 is a lot slower. I think Act 1 is very strong. Act 3, I think, it like builds. And then the action scene actually at the end of the movie is very quick. It's only like 10 minutes. Like,
it is, yeah. There's much more time devoted, I think. Or maybe equal time, but it's more of a spectacle is the attack on Wakanda.
Yes. That does kind of bring us on to our next talking point, which is the villain of the piece.
Yeah.
Played by Tenoch Huerta Maia, who is Namor. And I feel like, I think he does a great job. I really do.
Nailed Namor in this. And especially with the new, like, Aztec origin that they've given him. I think it all works super well. Like, his story about, like, oh, okay, so my people were invaded, they made a deal, they went to the oceans, I was born, and I had to watch my... I don't age, and I had to watch my mother age and die. Mm. I went back to bury her, and I saw people enslaved by the people who made my mother sick.
Yes.
And then it's just... And it's, again, it's vengeance. It's the other path that Shuri could always take.
And, like, obviously you can use the... I mean, in my head, I'm like, oh, this is so, like, the first movie. And then, of course, they bring back Michael B. Jordan because Ryan Coogler's smarter than everybody. And he's like, I know it's, like, the first movie. That's the point. Where Shuri is different. There's no point in T'Challa learning the same lesson again. Namor, I don't think, works as well with T'Challa as Black Panther because he's already been through the exact same idea. Like... Just, oh, Wakanda can use their power for different reasons, or we have vibranium, we're better than everyone. He kind of learned those lessons. We're sure he didn't. So, sure he can learn, and she comes at it from a completely different angle, where she's starting angry. She's starting like she hates the world too, and has to rein herself back. And also, Namor, by the way, people were complaining about the long origin story. Then maybe that adds a few minutes. But I think it's a trade-off. I think you get a slightly longer movie, but you get a more layered villain because then we hear about all of what happened to lead him.
Yeah, and when they go down to Talokan and they're like talking in that cave, like Namor is very... He's not raving. He's not like some lunatic, mad conqueror kind of dude. He's just like, no, this is the reality of it. We've stayed safe because we've stayed hidden. And this is a threat to it. Like, Namor is always an anti-hero. And I do think they nailed that in a way that he's not just bad but funny, like Venom is.
Yeah, like, and they always assume anti-heroes have to be funny. Like, he's not funny, but he also has a kind of point that he's like, I'm just defending my people. That I don't want them to find us. We're very happy here.
Yeah.
And I'm not bothering anyone and they're not bothering me. But if they keep start coming down and taking our stuff and discover us, then we're going to have problems.
Exactly. And the... Okay, and just on a very surface level thing, I love that he's like they've gone with the mutant thing. Like he has two little wings on his ankles. Because we did a Hero Zero on Namor a while ago. If people don't know, Namor is the first published mutant in Marvel Comics because all the other Atlanteans, they have the breathe underwater powers, but there's no explanation for the wings on his ankles. Those are just something he has. And I just love that they're in the film and they're keeping that with the character. I feel it would be very easy to get rid of those and no one would really bat an eyelid.
Also very easy to make it look fucking stupid.
Yeah, but it looks
so
cool.
They're terrifying. They're so scary.
They're like when you see them like flap up, you're like, oh, okay, he's going to move. And then he moves quick.
Yeah, like, and my favourite is like him flying and he's like jumping. He's like leaping off air. Like, and I think the bit that really sets it off is the bit with the helicopter to start in the darkness. Because it's just like, he can just fucking fly up, rip that helicopter in two and just kill those people. Like, nothing can stop him. It doesn't matter where you are. If you're on land, underwater, or in the air, he's going to take you out.
Yeah, and also he says Imperium Rex, which is his catchphrase in the comics.
Of course.
I was waiting for that the whole movie.
Speaking of actually that scene on the boat, really strong introduction.
The first one where they're like the divers are going down.
With the drill.
Terrifying. Absolutely. Like it's like a horror film at that point.
Yeah, because you have these characters that are like they come in and they're like, oh yeah, we're just drilling. And they come across vibranium, which is a 1 in 1 billion chance apparently that they were going to get it. And they just find some. And that's what sets it off. The bit that really gets me is the horn that goes off and all the men just leap into the ocean to kill themselves.
That's a fucked, that's twisted. But that's like, but like going back to like sailors, like the siren song that draws sailors to their deaths kind of a thing. That's what that is. Like, it's horrendous. How do you feel? I want to say as well, the way they found the vibranium is because of the vibranium detecting machine. That was made by Riri Williams. I really like Riri Williams as a character in this. I'm not sure how I feel about the vibranium detecting machine as a plot device.
But it does, it's a kind of one stone, two birds situation because you then get introduced Namor and Riri back to back. You anger Namor and Riri's the reason why he's angered. And so then you have Wakanda come save her. I feel like it was one of those where when you're writing the script, you put it down and go, that's kind of the, it's the safest option. Like, we could come up with a more convoluted plan of how she gets involved in this. Maybe she's the only one smart enough to stop it. But if she's at the source, she's the reason why they found the vibranium and angered him.
I suppose, yeah. Otherwise, the argument is that, oh, they just stumble upon the vibranium and then they just stumble upon Riri Williams.
So so the idea would be they stumble upon the vibranium accidentally and then Riri somehow gets involved because either he finds her.
She brings a piece to MIT and experiments on it or something
like
that.
Martin Freeman's like, this is my new sidekick, Riri Williams. She's really good. She can help you out, Shuri. Like, but why would he give Shuri Riri when he knows Shuri's like the smartest person in the whole world? Like, surely she could figure it out herself.
Yeah, it's very strange. And look, as you say, it's probably the simplest option is just, Riri made the machine for homework for a college project.
Obviously that's a bit far-fetched, but I also, there is a part of you in the movie that just is a bit of a buy-in, where like I was kind of watching it going, yeah, I can see why they've done that. I feel like that's the simplest, least complex way of moving the story along. She's come up with the drill. Let's get to it.
Exactly. And once that's out of the way, it's like, here's this new great character. Because like just her interactions with people sound like they're just very natural. Like she talks like a human in this movie.
Yeah, Dominique Thorne plays her. And I think she does a really great job. I think that's the script. I think the screenplay, also Ryan Coogler co-wrote the screenplay.
Yeah.
So he's all over this, but you can, one of Ryan Coogler's strengths is he makes people talk like humans, which is one of, like, it's, I think that's the most relatable thing you can do in a movie. There's a lot of the problems these movies are having is people aren't talking like humans. They're talking like Joss Whedon came up with them.
Yeah.
Like, for all of these movies. Whereas in this movie, people are just kind of reacted, just in silly ways. Just like a great scene that I feel like is really good is when they go into Riri Williams' room and, like, you have Okoye there and you've got Shuri, and she, like, has the... Doesn't she have, like, a heater? And she's like, you get out of my room, and they're like, just talking shit to her constantly.
So, like, you're no threat at the minute. Like,
and then she, like, uses the dagger. Like, you brought a dagger in here? What the fuck, man? It's really fucked up. But it's one of those where you can just have quips as well, but it has a bit of a human side to it, that scene. That really makes you like everyone.
Yeah, it's not just... it's not, hey, like this character because they're quipping. It's like, make this character likable and we will like them.
What I wanted to ask you actually was the cinematography. To me, really stood out. Really, really beautiful film. Some of the shots, handheld shots, is some of the ones that I really like. It's not one they go to, but it's great for showing, like, everything's not steady here. This is kind of a fucked up situation everyone's in.
This is pretty twisted. It is like, the cinematography in this is gorgeous. A lot, like, the stuff in the water all looks good. Like Talokan as well, just how it's designed is gorgeous. But then during the attack on Wakanda, where they're flooding the place, that's a lot of handheld and specifically, like, ground level. Like, it's not from, you know, the palace overlooking the city and seeing the water come in. Like, you are beside the wall as it breaks, looking up at this wave coming in.
And I think the handheld look, it really helps. I mean, like, not to get too into the weeds here, but it really helps because a lot of people know these are all done on sound stages. Like, all of these movies, that they always have that blurry background and the actor's always there in the front, that it's clearly, some of it doesn't look very real, that we've been talking about it recently. And that maybe has a bit of a disconnect for the human brain, whether you like it or not. But if you've got that handheld camera, there's something about that, like, your brain kind of overrides the fact that they're on a soundstage to be like, well, it's got to be slightly more real because it's not as polished.
The idea that someone is holding the camera makes it feel more real.
Because it's not like, it's not, I don't think it's as polished as camera's perfectly set up, everything looks beautiful, background is all blurry, we're just here. Like, it's clearly, like, done afterwards, and they add the effects in afterwards, where handheld kind of gives the idea that, like, the effects are already there. They're just kind of filming it as we speak.
Yeah, no, and it does a lot to make this, like, quite out there world and concept feel, you know, more real. How did you feel about when do you know when they go to the desert and they're, like, going to burn the funeral clothes?
Yes.
How did you feel about Shuri just immediately being like, no, there's nothing, like, there's no ancestral plane, there's none of that.
I understood that, though, as her character. Like, she's clearly not over it.
Yeah, but the way then that she grows, and then I like when she comes back from the ancestral plane, she's just angry. She's like, that was stupid, that was dumb. I hated that.
But I think they did a really good job there, because she's like, there's no ancestral plane, it's all fucking stupid, I'm just going to, and I don't want to be involved in any of your weird stuff, right?
Yeah.
Because she's obviously still, like, torn up and hurting inside. But then when she goes there and Michael B. Jordan is fucking sitting there, and it's a bit of her that, like, I love that character trait that, like, there's a moment where she's like, I don't really believe in this, but I'm going to go there anyway in the hope that T'Challa will be there, and I'll get to talk to him, and
or
I'll get to talk to
her father, or her mother, or,
like,
someone.
And there's a little bit inside her to be like, that wants to believe, and then when she sees him, she's just like, oh, hate this. And it's like, it makes it even worse, because you got your hopes up, even just for a slight moment, that it was going to be better.
And I love how the fact that, like, it does play into a lot of things, because Michael Killmonger, in, like, just focus on that for a second. I like how the fact that he became king of Wakanda, that still matters, because even M'Baku is saying in the meeting, He's like, I was the only one who didn't accept this dude. The rest of you let him walk in and just take over.
Yeah.
Like, I like how that's still a sore spot in the world.
I also think M'Baku, Winston Duke playing M'Baku, I think he was underutilised in this. I would have liked to see a bit more. I understand, though, it was Angela Bassett, Letitia Wright. They're like, they're going hard. And then, like, Lupita Nyong'o goes in this as well, killing it.
Oh, like, yeah, doing great work.
Like, she, what really amazed me, that, I'll come back to M'Baku in a second, but Nakia, like, when she gets reintroduced, there's this charisma that comes straight back in. That, like, you didn't realise was missing until, like, and obviously such a talented performer that, like, she walks on screen and you're just like, oh yeah, charisma's back. Here
we go. She's one of the best. Okay.
Yeah, perfect. She's one of the best in the world. Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and she as well, like, the her response to, because the Queen Mother says, oh, we missed you at the funeral. Her response to that is very real. Because she's just like, look, I'm sorry, I didn't think it would be right, I didn't think I'd be able, kind of a thing. And it was just a very nice moment, I thought.
And then you find out later on there's another level to that, but it's good that she didn't tell her dead.
Yeah, well, I suppose we'll talk about that other level in a bit. But just on M'Baku for a second, he might have been underutilized. I would have liked to see him more, but I also think he got better play than he did in the first Black Panther, because he's much more, not even wiser, but he's more of a counsel to Shuri in this one. Like, he's not the older brother, but he even says, I promised your brother I would do everything I could to help you.
And I like that. He's like the brother's friend who's like, I'll look after your little sister when you pass away. Like, and she's not going to listen to him, but he can still be there to be like, look, this is what I take. It's up to yourself. But I feel like you could do this if you need to. I think I just like M'Baku as a character. I would have just liked more scenes of him beating the shit out of people.
And is he then, with the end of the film, is he the king then? Because the film ends with, part of it is that, So Shuri becomes the new Black Panther. That's all fine. We'll get to that. But it ends with, you know, the challenge for the king.
Yes.
For the throne that they had in the first movie. It ends with that, but Shuri doesn't show up. And M'Baku just announces that he's here to challenge. So presumably he wins by default.
Unless somebody else steps up. But yeah, he would be king and she would be Black Panther then.
Yeah. So she, like, because presumably she has no interest in being king.
Or queen.
And, queen, excuse me. But M'Baku was shown to be very level-headed throughout the whole movie, like, as a good ruler would be.
So, I mean, that would be a pretty cool duo in terms of him being the king, but she's, like, the powerhouse. Like, she's the one that protects everything.
Yeah, and I like the bit when she jumps in the Black Panther suit and he tests. He's like, okay, are you stronger than me? And she fucking is.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually never even considered that. But yeah, he would be king by default.
Because I don't think anyone would challenge him either.
No, because he's the second best behind her.
Exactly. So, and people like him. Like, they always go to the Jabari for help.
Even when the whole city's destroyed, like, they go straight up to him.
Yeah.
To, like, seek refuge up there. Like, he's going to protect them.
And he is like, okay, of course, come on in. So I like that. I like that for that character, and I think it does fit. And it frees up Shuri then to do all of the Black Panther stuff.
And I think she works a lot better in that role. Like, she doesn't, and she's also seen what being king and queen did for her brother and her mother. In that, like, they're both dead now. Like, she doesn't want anything to do with that fucking royal area. Like, it clearly is a dangerous place to be. So, like, she's seen that and has thought, maybe I'm just going to be Black Panther in my own way. Just, I don't want to be involved in any of that weird stuff that goes on.
Exactly, yeah. And I think, and look, as Shuri as the Black Panther, I think that was always going to be, once Chadwick Boseman sadly passed away, I think that was the next logical step.
Yeah,
is that Shuri would take up the mantle, which she has done in the comics as well. That is a a thing that has happened before.
And look, I actually kind of think it works on both levels in terms of, like, people were saying, oh, M'Baku could be Black Panther. But I think he's more interesting as a character who's not Black Panther. Like, he's so interesting as the guy who thinks he's the most powerful, but there's one person he can't beat because they have superpowers. Yeah, so he's like the best... Yeah, like I love the idea that, like, he's like the leader of his people, but he's like, look, there's somebody else, but that's fine. I think he's a more interesting character. Otherwise, he'd be just so cocky all the time, I think.
That's it, but I also love how these super powerful characters, you know, like T'Challa and like Shuri, still treat him as an equal. And like, no, you've like earned your place at the table.
Oh, he's a warrior, like. He's a pure warrior.
Exactly. He's a warrior, he's a ruler, he's a diplomat, like, he's everything. I think that just says a lot more about him than if he were to become the new Black Panther.
Yeah, and I think Shuri was always going to be Black Panther. I don't see any issue with that. What else were you to do if the character was to stick around in Marvel? I mean, you could just not do a second Black Panther movie, but if the character was to stick around, she's the logical next step.
Yeah. There was an argument I was seeing online. There was a whole recast T'Challa thing. The argument being that, you know, it is terrible that this person died, but the character could still go on and the character could still be someone's favourite character. But I think that's where you get away with, like, it's a mantle, like, and it's probably in all of Marvel comics, that's the best mantle that there is, because it's always passed down and it has been for thousands of years, essentially.
I just feel like it's the best idea, and I also think that Namor's a really good opposition for her
as her great first foil for sure,
like, as her first out, because he is her. If, like, she lets the anger and the grief take over, they're like, we're better than everyone. We should just take them all out. Like, this is what and that was Killmonger's idea, but Killmonger's thing was, we get them on the hop to be like, we're better than them. Let's just take them all out. Like, they did this to us. Let's fuck them up. Whereas Namor's, like, a deeper level where he's like, I was happy hiding, but then they came to me. And now I'm either with you, you're either with me or you're against me, because I'm going to take them out.
Yeah, and his argument is also like, no, listen, you revealed Wakanda, you revealed vibranium to the world. That's on you. Us potentially being discovered came from the fact that you revealed vibranium.
And
so
they
you
then
need to take some ownership for that.
Yeah, so that and he's like, it's kind of your fault. So all I'm looking for is maybe a bit of support while I'm doing the bad things that I have planned.
Yeah, his whole thing is just like, look, I'm just going to kill the person that can make the machine. And that's it. And what's weird is Wakanda is fine with that until they get to know her.
Yeah, but also Wakanda has proven that, like, as a whole, like, they're just going to do anything to stay hidden. Like, that was proven in the first one.
Yeah.
To be like, we're... And I do like...
Well, this
idea.
Is it, yeah. He's like, the king killed his brother as well, like, to keep Wakanda safe.
So, I mean, they'll do anything to keep Wakanda safe. And so, all they're hearing is, like, we've just got to kill one person. Yeah, okay, cool. Let's do that. But obviously, then you have Shuri, who's involved in it, that's like... Maybe we shouldn't do this. Maybe we should, you know, talk to them. Because even though she's hurting, she's still a logical character.
Yeah, she doesn't... There's no, like, Daenerys immediate insanity that happens for Shuri in this movie.
No.
Which I think could have been very easy to throw some of that in.
I love the Shuri-Okoye dynamic. I love that, like, everyone's afraid of Okoye. Because, like, the Dor Milaje are, like, just fucking straight-up killers. Like, they are just the best of the best. And it's proven at the very start of this movie with the French infiltration team just getting all taken out one by one. But you also have this moment where Shuri doesn't really see her as a warrior, more so just as, like, a sister. So, like, she's just taking the piss over while she's going around.
Yeah, and they have that, like... So Shuri and... Is it Ao?
Ao is the one with the small knives.
Yeah, which is great. And I like how Okoye is kind of like stuck in her ways and old fashioned in this movie. Yeah. She's like, I just want my spear. That's all I need. Shut up. But they both get basically Iron Man suits in this movie as well.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that. I think they're cooler when they don't have them, but I mean,
yeah.
Let's stop with the Iron Man suits and maybe it makes, I feel like it made Riri Williams less cool because now everybody's got an Iron Man suit.
Yeah. And I look, also, I fucking love the like scrapped together Riri Williams Iron Man suit, like the first one she has.
Yeah.
Like that's the best looking one to me because the rest of them just look like, you know, you took them right off the 3D printer and just started wearing them.
And they use the oxygen thing again.
Yeah.
They're always using that. I didn't think they'd bring it back, but when they did, I was like, this motherfucker's going to come up later in the movie.
But that's also, yeah, it is. That is going to happen. But also there is the, from a character point of view, where it's like, Tony Stark figured that out, you know, in universe, like nearly 20 years ago. So like, even though she has similar suits and access to great technology, she still hasn't learned all the lessons.
Mm.
You know, it's not just like, and here's, you know, your one-to-one Iron Man equivalent.
Well, because he's not really around these days. So
no,
he isn't.
No, he was killed by Dumbledore.
Poor old Anthony fucked off.
So, I, you know, from a character perspective, it shows like Riri Williams has like, she's a genius, but she is her own character and person, has her own journey to go on.
And also,
at the end of the film, she leaves without the suit.
Yeah, she does, because she prefers her one, and she'll keep working on that one. Right.
Yeah, but Shuri is just like, look, I can't, it's riddled with vibranium. I can't let you leave with that. I can't let you take that back to America.
Because Shuri's going to build her one that's like a Shuri suit, rather than it's a Riri Williams suit, which they're different.
Yeah.
I also like that Shuri now becomes the big sister. That she's like this other genius. That like we have so much in common now that we can work together, and you could see them becoming closer over the next few years. That like they're a duo.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, that they have this relationship and they've seriously bonded in their time together.
Mm.
And yeah, I think going into all the big, because there is going to be a lot of big team up stuff and shenanigans going on. I think the more relationships like that, the better. Like, you know, if there is a scene where, you know, they're in Battle World or something in Secret Wars and they just look at each other and it's just like, this is fucking weird, but I'm glad you're here. That's a nice moment.
And also in any situation, they're the two smartest people. So it's like everyone else is going to look at the two of them to be like, come up with something.
I can't wait for Spider-Man to meet those two and to just be like completely out of his depth. Spider-Man in those movies is clever, but he's nowhere near as clever as them.
He's not as smart as those two, so he's just like trying to survive, and he's like, the two of you are the two smartest people I've ever met in my whole life. No, I also really like that oxygen is what knocks out Namor, and I felt like they did a really good job in showing that. Like, I mean, even on the attack, they mention it later on, but the bit when he dives back into the water to fly back out to then start taking out more, and you're just like, well, that makes perfect sense. Of course he does. He needs more water because he gets oxygen from the water.
Exactly, yeah, and in the comics, the longer he's out of water, the weaker he gets. And that's a really nice scientific way of quantifying that.
Mm.
That it's just like, no, because he's breathing air and he's taking in water, oxygen through his skin all the time.
Yeah, and so their logical idea is, let's just fucking heat him up. Let's keep him away from the water as far away from the water as possible for as long as time as possible.
Yeah, and then when they're fighting in the ship and he just starts wrecking it, he's like, okay, I'm just going to blow up the ship. And Shuri, before she even starts fighting, she's like, okay, head for the desert. Because if we explode over the desert, that's way better for me.
Yeah. What do you feel about the ending with Shuri getting straight sliced, straight through the middle, and then that's like just kind of slows her down and then the fight continues for another 5 minutes?
I mean, like, she's got the vibranium suit. And the vibranium, like the vibranium fucking bead bracelets have been shown to like cure Everett Ross of, you know, being paralysed from the waist down.
True.
So I think that if Shuri was building a suit, first of all, the heart-shaped herb would give you some kind of regenerative healing factor, and Shuri would definitely build some kind of healing element into the suit.
Yeah, like, I think so. I would have maybe a line where they're like, oh, I add a regenerative thing in, just with, like, before the battle.
See, I kind of prefer that. Like, if I hear that as
you
an
know
audience member,
yeah,
I'm like,
okay,
oh, this woman's getting stabbed through the stomach.
Yeah, I suppose. It was one of those where, like, she got stabbed. I was like, oh, that should be the end. And then she just, like, kept going. And I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, this is going on.
Yeah, but, like, also, T'Challa got stabbed in the stomach without a suit on and
true,
without the Black Panther herb, and they just put him in the snow for a couple of days and he was grand.
True. That is actually very true, yeah. Well, I really love the battle in Wakanda when Namor just... when they escape, and because that's the battle that was, like, distracted them, and then you have, like, that moment of, like, oh, we got away. And then there's, like, Namor's going to come looking for the two of you.
Yeah, and I love, like, Nakia comes in to save them. And she shoots one of the, like, you know, ladies-in-waiting in Talokan. And Shuri's just like, we need to save her. And Nakia's like, now isn't the time. Like, this is, like, she's an enemy, she kidnapped you. And Shuri's like, no, if she dies, then it's war.
And she's absolutely correct. But, like, Naki is not wrong in that situation where she's like, we got to get you out of here.
Like, yeah, no, and she was told by any means necessary. Like,
And also, Nakia is aware that if she doesn't get them out, she's kidnapped as well, and then they have no hope whatsoever. So it's either we get out now or none of us get out. And Shuri's completely correct in that if we let this woman die, he's going to kill all of us. And so I love the bit where she's like, fortify the water entrances. So, like, can't get in. I don't want anybody. And immediately breaks through because he's Namor, and nobody's ever dealt with anything like him ever. So they would have no way of knowing how to stop him.
Yeah, you know, he's incredibly fast and strong. He's faster in the water.
Yeah.
Like, he's a proper threat in this movie.
And like, when he attacks the city, like, they have no hope. Like, there's nothing that they can do. No matter how many of our main characters are there, he's just going through them.
Yeah, and there's, like, even when you defeat any of the other, like, soldiers, they just get come back. Like,
yeah.
There's a bit on the bridge where Anakoya even says, she's like, I dealt wounds to three of them that would have killed men twice their size. And they kept coming. Like,
I really love the slow motion explosion with the grenades that are full of water. That's so cool.
They're really great. And, like, yeah, because that's something that does, it will do damage to your enemy, but also it won't hurt you because it's water.
Exactly. It would just power you up.
Yeah. It's really clever. And the designs as well look really, really good of those. Like the soldiers and citizens of Talokan.
Yeah, the costumes for this whole thing are amazing. Like, through that whole funeral scene at the start, like, everything to do with the costume designing on this is, like, impeccable.
It's the same team that did for the first movie, and I think that did get nominated for an Academy Award.
I mean, it deserves another one, to be honest, because it's just, they just never miss. They just absolutely smash it every single time.
They just nailed it.
They just nail it. And my favourite bit about the attack is the bit with Angela Bassett and then Riri Williams. Like the Queen and Riri are there and she saves her and then she dies. And Namor's just like, I give you another week. Mourn your dead. Bury them. I'll be back.
And you're the Queen now, so it's your call. Like, it's so good. And also, just before that happens, like, the Queen is coordinating things and Riri is like, listen, I can help. And there's no, like, debate. The Queen is just like, yeah, get in here, start working.
You're smart.
Yeah, she's aware of how capable she is. That scene as well where Angela Bassett is, like, diving down to catch Riri Williams underwater and dragging her back up. Fucking gorgeous. As well.
Like, Ryan, what? Fuck me, man. So good.
And then the contrast of that is, like, when Shuri comes in, and that's heartbreaking watching her fucking
And once again, no
mother.
Music. Just
no music.
Just her in devastation.
And like her mother is just like face down in a puddle of water. Like,
yeah. And she just looks at Namor just at the window being like, I'll be back. Right? That's what, that's your queen god. So now you're the queen. Now you deal with it.
And like this wasn't, they had like maybe 10 minutes to plan this as well. Like, imagine what they could do with an actual like full on assault.
Like it's such a good scene to show like Namor is not to be fucked with, but it also I feel like slightly hurts the last battle, because I think that battle is so good that the last one's a bit more of a letdown. Like it's over, like as I said, in about 10 minutes, and it's on a boat, which seems like a terrible idea. Why would you attack Namor on a boat? Go to the ocean. I think it's because,
yeah, but also they're risking so much damage and civilian loss if they fight in Wakanda. And I think the ocean strategy is more so they can negate certain things by going out to the ocean. Like they have the sonic emitter that keeps all the whales and sharks and everything away. They have, you know, they can fight on top so that they you know, they can't be jumped. They can just channel things the way that they want. Also, the way that the Dora Milaje fight, like rappelling down the side of the boat.
Yeah, very, really very good.
And then Shuri comes in and she's like clawing and swinging. And like she's a much more agile Black Panther than T'Challa was.
Like T'Challa was more Captain America, like power, where she can be agility. Like she could be more like Dick Grayson instead of Batman.
Exactly, yeah. Like it's still as effective, but just a different way of going about it.
Yeah, and look, I'm not saying the last battle is bad. I'm just like, my idea would be the battle before is so good and so like compelling, just watching Namor just butcher through people, that like the next scene, I felt like the next battle had to be as like better, and I felt like it wasn't as good, and so I was like, oh, it's not bad, but it's just because it follows such a cool scene. It's it kind of stands out.
And maybe it's like, maybe it's me and I'm naive, or maybe it's a testament to the writing. But like in the very last bit where like Shuri wants to kill Namor, and like, and then she like sees her mother and she starts thinking, I really didn't know which way that was going to go. I think that Shuri could have killed him in that moment, and it's still as good of an ending. Now, I knew he wasn't going to die because he's Namor, and they wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But I thought it would make sense in that moment if the character did decide to kill him.
I do think that's a testament to the writing. I think Coogler, he like sets you up for the 50-50. That's what you want. Like you want the moment where like, is she going to do it? Is she not going to do it? Because you can see both sides of the argument.
Like when Captain America lifts up the shield to, you know, supposedly behead Iron Man. Like, you know he's not going to do it.
Yeah.
And he never would. But Shuri in that moment, I'm like, no, she totally could do this and she'd probably be fine in the end.
But I also will say the last battle in this is a million times better than the battle in Black Panther.
Oh, so much better.
like, that battle is so terrible. Like, that movie is so good and then the last battle is so terrible that, like, people have, like, blacked out that scene from their head just to be like, look, that didn't happen. It's a weird PS2 graphics in a weird room. We're just not even going to talk about it. In this one, the VFX is much better. Really, really excellent VFX in this, in terms of like the water, underwater, any scenes involving any battles. I feel like it's just really, really good. And I think Ryan Coogler knew, like, we got to go all out here. Like, this, there can't be a weak scene in this again. And I think he nailed it.
Yeah, we can't pull any punches on this one. Like,
yeah.
I think overall, I think it's the best movie of Phase 4.
Which doesn't sound like a compliment, but I think it's also much better than all
this. Yeah. There is a valley of difference between this and second best.
Yeah. Why is second best?
Shang-Chi, I would say, for me.
We're not throwing Spider-Man into this. No.
Oh. Nah, maybe we should throw Spider-Man into it.
Sony or Marvel?
Spider-Man is a Marvel, like, it's the MCU.
I think it would be
this, then Spider-Man, then Shang-Chi, then way at the bottom Thor, Love and Thunder, and somewhere in the middle I would put Black Widow.
You also forgot the Eternals.
What are the Eternals?
We're not going to get into it. We're not going to get into it. I mean, I just feel like this movie is way better than it has any right to be, is what I would say. And I really love the mature tone of just like death. Like,
yeah.
And people can kind of get down, and maybe you want to go to the movies and have fun. But sometimes it's cool to go to a movie and be like, bad shit happens. And like, how are we going to deal with it? The fallout from that for these characters that we like. And that they're really emotionally affected by it, and maybe that impacts their actions moving forward. That's such a really thin line to tread. I think they did a really good job on this.
Yeah, no, and yeah, as a Marvel movie as well, to deal with a topic like death and grief and, you know, anger and recovery and all this, like, it's just such a far cry from, you know, that movie where Thor has a couple of goats that scream a lot.
And the axes, he's having sex with both axes or something?
Yeah, yeah, that's a whole thing. so I think that and not to be like hyperbolic or anything like that, but it shows how good movies in this universe can be.
Yeah.
You know, it's by no means the best or my favourite Marvel movie, but it's just, you know, it is doable. You can make a good...
Also, Ryan Coogler is just incredibly talented. Just absolutely. In general.
Yeah. And maybe start hiring and paying talented people.
And also, everyone in this movie is also amazing in terms of performances. Like, I think standout would have to go to Angela Bassett. I think she's just like, just absolutely just murdering
that scene in the throne room where Okoye is apologising. And Angela Bassett is just like, I gave my husband, I gave my son, I might be giving my daughter, I am done, like, giving any slack. Like, you just, all let him in, you let Killmonger in. And
like, it's just genuinely such a powerful moment. And, like, her as a character of the Queen is just like, holy shit. Like, you're just sucked in with that performance.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are some flaws in terms of you could cut 20 minutes out, but I think this movie is really, really good. And I'm hope everyone has seen it if you've heard this.
And then before, like, because we're getting close to time on this, but the T'Challa the Second is revealed.
Oh, yes, we forgot to talk about that.
We touched on it earlier, but yeah, so T'Challa and Nakia during the 5 years, shortly before T'Challa was snapped for 5 years, had a son named Toussaint, who was like a Haitian like revolutionary leader, but his Wakandan name is T'Challa.
Mm. So, and where do you like that idea?
I do. I think it's cool. It's cool that like what they're implying there is that there will be another T'Challa who is the Black Panther down the line. I don't know, is there like a young Black Panther in Young Avengers or anything like that? I don't think there is.
No, I don't think so. Also, it would make no sense because like he would have to eat and then he would have the same powers as Shuri, really?
Yeah.
Like, then they're both the exact same power level, which is kind of weird for like a young Black Panther and an old Black Panther.
Yeah, so unless it's like he has a suit or something that does it. Yeah, I think it's, the thing with T'Challa the Second is that they raised him away from Wakanda, so he's not concerned with the throne or power.
No, like, I think it's really good in terms of as a storytelling perspective that Shuri gets to like just kind of be a big sister to T'Challa, and that she now gets to, and also it's kind
she's
of
a cool really, aunt,
and it also helps with like her grief that like T'Challa is dead, but now there's another T'Challa in her life that she's like she can put all of her efforts into protecting this kid and making him the best version that he can be.
Yeah, and she's like and like this young T'Challa is revealed after she says the traditional like Wakandan funeral goodbye to her brother T'Challa. I also love that goodbye scene that she does, because there's no words. There's no words. It's just a look, and she burns the thing.
Oh, man. It's so good. Like I could not get over the fact that it was just letting us react like humans. It was just like, let's just not have words all the time. Or
it was just treating you like you were like fully emotionally developed. Like
so weird.
Imagine that.
I didn't have Shuri going, I'm very sad right now.
Yeah, I don't think it would have been out of place either if she had said a little goodbye speech and it's about T'Challa, but it's really about Chadwick. But I think it's way better if you just have like that character thinking their own thing and we're thinking our own thing.
And also it allows the audience to go through that as well. Like it takes into account, like the audience are probably also sad about Chadwick Boseman. Like a worse movie would then hammer into you to be like, be sad. Do you remember he died? Like you should be sad. But where this is like, just assumes that like we're all just regular people and we're kind of sad. The poor man just passed away. Like let's just not dwell on it. Let's, like, just, everyone's sad, the characters are sad, but let you don't have to say it out loud.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't need to be a big, like, statement piece. Mm. It can just be, no, this is sad, but it's okay.
Yeah. I think that's, I mean, do you have anything else to discuss with this movie?
No, I don't think so. I'm just, like, I was happily surprised. I really didn't know what to expect with this one, whether it would be, you know, as good as I was hoping, or as bad as I've come to expect.
High praise.
Hell yeah.
High praise.
I love comics.
Is this our last big movie of the year other than Avatar?
I'm not talking about Avatar.
I think we kind of have to review Avatar. It's the biggest movie of the year, Sean.
Can we talk about Knives Out instead?
Oh, yeah, Knives Out. Yeah. I think that's already out, isn't it?
I think maybe so.
It might not be out for us.
I think it's in the cinema. It's in the cinema, definitely. I don't know.
Oh, it's getting
Netflix,
the week-long release.
Yeah, yeah. So it can be in for Oscars contention.
Yeah, dead right. Dead right. So, Sean, would you like to take us out? That was a review of Black Panther.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of Movie Mondays. We'll be back on Wednesday with Weird News Wednesday, Friday with Hero or Zero, and next Monday with another episode of Movie Mondays. Big thank you goes out to everyone over on Patreon who continues to support the show. Shoutouts, of course, go to Roisin the Wife Palmer, Joe Burney, Ryan Technically Fine Evanson, Waffles the Magic, David Clark, Sean Chuckling in the Wash and It'll Be Grand Jameson, Dominic, Anna Irish Wallers Forever Helm Roos, Danny McLaughlin, No One's Ever Really Gone, Luke Hoth, Lord Smish, Michelle Brown, Michaela Doughty, Buster, Ed Ball, Sean, Connor and Lorraine have added this Patreon nickname intentionally to test Sean's lung capacity and apparently ability to speak. And also Russ, forget those moonwalkers and just walk parfait. Thank you all very, very, very much for supporting the show. If you want to join those amazing people, you can go to patreon.com/heroesforhirepodcast to do that. There's also the merch store, heroesforhire.ie/shop. Twitter's at Heroes for Hire Pod, the 4 is the number 4. Facebook is Detective Devilment's Discussion Group. Instagram is Heroes for Hire Podcast. And the best way to ever help out the show is to tell one human being that we exist.
Just a one, please.
And I think that's about it, Connor.
I think so. So I've been Connor Lawler.
I've been Sean Meehan.
And we shall see you all next week, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers.
With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.